Mark Steiner, and welcome. Dr. Bob Hieronymus, who is a historian, one of Baltimore and the Augusta Country's great muralists, philosopher, entrepreneur, man, puts things together all the place, sent me this note saying that he's involved with the Experience Hendrix 2012 Tribute Tour and would like to do a show about it, and would we like to have on the legendary Billy Cox, who was Jimi Hendrix's best friend and bassist. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. No, I didn't say that at all. And so
I almost disconnected your cord there, brother.
So here they are. Bob and Billy are on the show. Welcome, gentlemen. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, Mark, good to be here.
Well, I've always loved being here. It's a good place to be. You forgot to mention that
in my
senior year, I won 35 games pitching right-hander, left-hander. You forgot about that.
I'm sorry about that. I can never play that kind of ball. It was not my game.
No. I'm sorry about that.
Basketball and soccer. Wrestling, boxing, but...
That's not real games.
But I couldn't play the other one. So, gentlemen, it's great to have you both here with us.
Thank
this
you.
Is great.
All right, good to be here.
So tell us, first, let's start before we jump into a bit of history and with Billy and what this whole tour is. Since you brought it to my attention, Bob Hieronymus, tell us what this tour is.
Well, this is I'm going to ask Billy Philly on what this tour is.
Okay.
But I just wanted to mention how I got involved. And this was back in 1968, in July of 1968. The first time was about – I met with Jimmy. It was about July 3rd, to be exact.
Where was that?
New York City, in a nightclub there. And at this nightclub, there was Eric Clapton and he was jamming in this little place. And, I mean, it was a little place. And I was told to go there because I was going to be doing record album covers for Elektra Records. Now, Elektra didn't do Jimmy, but they said, you know, if you pass the test by meeting Jimmy, and then Jim Morrison wants to talk to you because Jim Morrison can allegedly see through his fingers. And I said, Jim, you could see further than that, brother. I mean, you know. But anyway, he said, okay, you want to meet Jimmy? Go tomorrow at this little place, and he will say hello to you and talk to him. Talk to him about what you talked to us about, which was about UFOs, reincarnation, the eye in the triangle and the pyramid, other worlds, etc. He says we can't. They called themselves shirts, and they said we can't talk to them. But a guy looking like you with your 25-inch beard and long hair, you look like you can. So I did, and I was just. It was unbelievable. Now this is not going to surprise Billy, or is not going to surprise his sister or anybody else, but Jimmy was the kind of guy that anybody could go up to and talk to, and there was no ego.
Right.
He would listen to you. And I'm sitting there and I'm getting ready and I'm talking about these album covers. And he's saying, look, you know, what else are you interested in? I said, the eye in a triangle and the pyramid. He said, the eye in a triangle and the pyramid. Now, I had been talking in this town
for a long time.
For about 65, somewhere around there. But most people didn't know that there was a whole spiritual aspect to America. He knew it. He knew more than that. So I thought to myself, of all the people I've ever wanted to talk to, Morrison or Dylan or any of these other people, he knew more than anyone else I knew, with no ego.
Wow.
And a love for the entire planet. Well, I'm prejudiced towards that. So that's what got me involved. And then when I found out that Janie Hendrix became the CEO.
Jimmy's sister.
Yes, Jimmy's sister. I thought, you know, wow. Maybe I can find out if they have any drawings that Jimi Hendrix did of the eye in a triangle and a pyramid. And he did. And I found them, and she dated them for me as being somewhere at the end of August, July into August, sometime in there. Which I'm not saying that I taught him anything, because I didn't. He already knew.
Right, right.
That was the key.
Right.
But every time I ever talked to anybody about Jimmy, and I said, there is a brilliant side to him. Yes, he's the greatest musician on a guitar, but there's much more to Jimmy. Now,
I'm sorry.
That's how it developed for
that's
me.
That's great. I love that story. And I mean, you always find a way of doing these things. And you know, these fence in July 68, right? Is what you said?
Yeah, July 4th.
So it was May. I don't know if you played here, Billy, or not, but I'm trying to remember. It was May 68 when Resurrection City was hot and heavy in D.C., and I was part of organizing and living in Resurrection City, in the Poor People's Campaign, that we snuck up to New York in May of 68 to catch Jimmy at the Fillmore East.
Oh, you went to the big place.
Yeah. I remember that. That was just before you met him. So, Billy Cox. So,
yeah.
Before we jump into your legendary relationship, which I think people need to know about, Talk about a bit about this tour.
Well, this tour is the concert event of the year. That's how I look at it. Together on stage, no lip syncing, no soundtrack. I mean, this is the real deal. And this particular group embodies the true spirit of Jimi Hendrix and his music. We've got Buddy Guy, Johnny Lang, Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Robert Randolph, Robbie Krieger, Caesar and David with the Los Lobos, Eric Johnson, Kev Moe. Who did I miss? Oh, Dweezil Zappa, Brad Whitford.
Chris Layton
and Slide Brothers.
Wow.
And Bootsy Collins. So we're going to have an array of different musical artists on here, but all in one accord who are, they embody the true spirit of Jimi Hendrix, and they're Jimi Hendrix aficionados.
So what are you playing his songs again, playing their songs? What are they going to be doing?
We're playing Jimmy's songs. I mean, it's just like we're doing the concert of Jim. It's like when a concert pianist may do a volume of Mozart or a Beethoven, Handel, Liszt, Gershwin. So we're doing Hendrix.
And I was reading this thing. You're going to be playing Little Wing, Fire, Purple Haze, Voodoo Child.
There you go. Now, sometime we'll put our individual type of arrangement to it, but however, you'll recognize the songs when you hear them.
I'm curious, Billy, just that, I mean, one of the things that you've been known as before when it comes to Jimi Hendrix and his legacy is you were dear friends, met in the Army back in 60, if I remember right from reading.
61.
But you've been kind of a keeper and, more importantly, in some senses, a defender of Jimi Hendrix's legacy.
He was my friend, and we were young kids in our teens. We both had similar backgrounds musically and stories, and we kind of locked right into each other in the moment that we met. And it was through a musical experience. He was practicing at this service club, and I happened to come by running from getting out of the rain, went in, introduced myself, checked out a bass, and that friendship lasts for a lifetime.
Tell the story a bit so listeners get a sense of this. And I'll ask one question before we bring Dr. Bob back in here. Is that when you two struggled together and played music in is it Memphis?
Nashville.
And, I mean to say Nashville, and where the greats and the not so greats rubbed elbows and played. But when he went to London, where he got his break, he asked you to go with him.
Yes, he did.
So tell that story. But what happened?
Oh well, he we formed this group called the King Casuals here in Nashville. We played at this club, and then we did the Chitlin' Circus back and forth. But he knew he was destined for greatness. He just didn't know how it was going to come to him. So he'd go out with this group, and next thing you know, he's calling me, Billy, I'm stranded in St. Louis. We'd get the money together, and at that time in the 60s, you could travel on a Greyhound or a Trailways bus almost halfway across the United States, $25 or $30.
That's right.
And he'd come back in Nashville, and then next thing you know, somebody would come through town, and he'd latch on to them, and he's off again. This happened about 5 or 6 times. This one time, the last time, he'd gone for 4 months. I didn't even hear from him, not a call, not a letter, nothing. Nobody ever had heard from him. And next thing you know, I get this call. I didn't have a phone at the house because we were too poor back that time. And the guy 2 doors over had a radio and TV shop. And the guy runs over and said, look, Jimi Hendrix wants to talk to you. And I ran over. He says, look, he said, this guy has discovered me, Billy, in New York. And he's going to take me to Europe, and he said he's going to make me a star. I told him about you, so come on up to New York and go on over with me and become a star. I said, Jimmy, I said, I can't make it. I said, I've got 3 strings on my bass. The 4th one's tied in a square knot, and I'm renting a amp. He says, man, you've fallen on hard times. I said, yeah. He said, but that's okay. I'll make it, and when the time's right, I'll send for you. And you know what? He was a man of his word.
And he called you just before you played Woodstock, or was it earlier than that?
Just prior to Woodstock, right. Maybe 5 or 6 months before the Woodstock Festival. And because Noel had decided to do his own thing with his group, and the group was having some going through some changes, and he had to get a bass player, so he said, okay, he wanted me to come up, so I went up, and I'm glad I did.
And you are the last surviving member of both the Jimi Hendrix Experience and the Band of Gypsies.
Yes, I am, through the grace of God.
So this is, for both you guys, Bob, this is like is a passion for you. I mean, you don't get into things unless they are your passion.
Well, I can't help it. I'm sorry. But, you know, this is, of the few folks I knew in rock and roll, Hendrix, there's a side to him which needs to be told. You know why? You know why? Because the media and the fundamentalists in the past have done a real axe job on people like Janis Joplin and and Morrison and all these others.
All the rest.
And you know, I only spent a very little bit of time with Morrison and a very little bit of time with Joplin, but you can't compare them to a guy like Hendrix. He was so advanced. He was an advanced soul. I believe he has a destiny yet, which has a lot to do with making this, how corny this is going to sound. We're one people on one planet. We've got to figure out how on a H we're going to stop war. I can say hell?
You can say hell.
All right, okay. Well, how in the hell are we going to stop war? Because this is the key to Jimmy, peace, love. And that's been almost made into a dirty word by fundamentalists, you know. And obviously, that's one of the reasons why I want to support every effort in regards to this very great soul who had most, even the people that surrounded him, maybe except with the exception of Billy and a few others, some of them. Billy, am I wrong in saying there were a great many hangers-ons?
There were too many of them.
And they would... because Jimmy was the kind of person he was, he didn't like to throw people out. He didn't want to do this and that. He was always very kind. He was a kind soul.
Mm-hmm. An incredible human being.
So, I'm sorry.
So that's the reason why I believe now is the time, especially in the next few years. The world's not going to end by 2012. We all knew that. I mean, come on.
Some people think there may be a good shift happening, but it's not going to end.
Oh, well, the shift in consciousness, which is really a key. People are beginning to understand exactly what has held this country back for a long time, and that has to do with love. How in the world can we have so much love from all my Christian and Jewish friends, and yet we continuously go to war? And it has a lot to do with the way women have been treated. Now, that's something else altogether, I understand.
That's another issue, but yes, you're right. You're right. Go ahead, Billy. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So talk a bit about your sense of, because I think this is important, that, you know, we talk about, and to have people as you on this program right now, who knew him well since the Army and played with him and were close until the day he passed and left us, and Bob here, who knows him as well. To give a sense of this, who the man was, beyond all we see in terms of the stories about, you know, overdosing, drug use, mania.
Yeah.
But talk a bit about the Jimmy you knew from the Army days on, who this man was to you and who he really was in his soul to the people around him.
You were like Dr. Bob said, he was a real genuine human being. And he hated to say no to anybody. He was a real person. But someone asked me, says, well, you know, after it's been 40-some years, how come you guys, and he was really not a Jimi Hendrix aficionado anyway, but he says, how come he's so great now? I says, well, Jimi Hendrix was a genius, and true geniuses create in the now, which makes their art transcend time. I mean, Van Gogh, Picasso, Mozart, Beethoven, Brahms, Hendrix, he took the guitar and rock music to another level. And he threw the rule book out the door. Therefore, in transcending time, it reaches down generations and transcends cultural boundaries. So, right, I look out in the audience and I see kids as young as 8, 9, and 10, and adults as old as 70 and 75 years old in the audience. So he reaches down through the generations, and kids are coming up to my booth, the merch booth, and I'm signing autographs for 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kids who are picking up guitar for the first time in their lives. But I've always said, too, there are two kind of guitar players, one who will admit being influenced by Jimi Hendrix and one who will not admit being influenced by Jimi Hendrix.
So I read an article about you, an interview with you, that was in the Nashville, I think it was called the NashvilleScene.com. And what I found interesting was one of the things you talked about with Jimi Hendrix is people's the kind of myth that you broke about Jimi Hendrix just walking into the studio and playing and jamming without thinking or writing music, putting together, and not being like the thorough musician, let's say, McCartney or Lennon were. You know what I'm saying? And you kind of blew a hole in that. Talk a bit about that, what it was like watching him create the sound and how he did it.
Yeah, well, he had his own way of doing things, and he could take the song from the beginning to the end, and then in the middle do a solo forward and have the engineer to play it backwards, and it would fit for the chord changes that was going on. Now, that takes a heck of a mind to be able to do that. In fact, it takes what is called a genius to be able to do that. So he was very creative. I mean,
talk about being a creative. I mean, look where he was moving near the end of his life, right, Billy?
What do you mean?
There you go.
He was going into a whole new area, going back with a mixture of kind of jazz.
We were including jazz and classical music.
Right. And, you know, we're trying to get the BSO to do a Jimi Hendrix concert someday.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not a bad idea.
I know, but it's tough. It's tough sledding.
But he, all through that time, he knew he was destined to do that. Someone said, "Fate are the cards that you are dealt at birth, but destiny is what you do with those cards."
Absolutely.
And I think he knew where he was going and how he was going about getting there. It just took the time. It took time for him for all of that to develop.
Why do you think he had to be discovered in England and not here?
I don't know. I think we're a little spoiled. We have a little bit of everything, all the genres of music. And then when he went there, he stood out. He was very unique with his dress, his appearance, and his playing of the guitar. And then once people said, "Listen to this," then it started a snowball effect around the world.
So coming back to this concert and the few tickets that may be left when people hear this, that it's going to be amazing. I mean, the people who are going to be here and who are going to be playing that night. You even got Madonanji from Indigenous is going to be playing, right?
Yeah, I forgot to mention him, yeah.
That was a great band. Buddy Guy.
Who's Buddy Guy, Buddy Johnny Guy. Lang.
Now, Buddy was Jimmy's cousin, is that right?
Buddy Guy?
Is that wrong or right?
I don't know. Okay. I really can't live on that. But he respected Buddy because of his years with Muddy Waters.
Right.
And Buddy Guy was one of the, I think he stayed with Muddy Waters for years. And he was all that guitar playing you hear from the early Muddy Waters, that was Buddy Guy.
Oh.
Then we got Johnny Lang. He's going to be an incredible singer.
Do you know if Dweezil Zappa is going to be here?
Dweezil Zappa will be on this one. Yes, that's Frank Zappa's son.
Yeah.
That's he's who played here in Baltimore at the Enoch Pratt Library not long ago.
Well, an incredible guitar
right.
player.
Yeah, remember when Frank played at Eastern High School?
Yes.
I did his poster.
That's right, you did. That's right, that's right.
Yeah, I looked at that. Was really, and I did his light show.
And Chris Layton of Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble will be there. Eric Gales. And this guy, this great bass player named Billy Cox.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Oh, him?
Yeah, he's going to be there.
Right? What is this?
Don't forget Cab Moe.
Cab Moe, who I just love. He's one of my favorite new blues players out, period, Cab Moe.
And Bootsy Collins, can you believe that? The bass player Bootsy Collins. I like Bootsy.
So now, what will you be jamming on? Tell me what you'll be doing that evening, Billy.
I don't know. We have to get together and find out who's doing what. I more likely will start off with maybe Stone Free, and maybe Dolly Dagger, Freedom, or something of that nature. Whatever will fit into the show. We're going to do probably a rehearsal the day prior to that, and probably be, I'm ready to do at least 10 songs, whatever they want me to do.
But this is an amazing lineup. Okay, I'm going to say something, Bob. Go ahead.
Well, it is an amazing lineup. I mean, when they were here last time, I've only seen this them get together once, and that was at the Hippodrome. And it was truly extraordinary. It really was. I mean, people more or less just were reminiscing all the way through it. But you know, every time I see these kind of events, the thing that strikes me most of all are the images that I have in my head about the life of Jimi Hendrix, such as before he went off to England. You know, he was very poor. He's extremely poor.
Yeah.
And one image that is kind of funny, but it's sad because a lot of us lived through the same kind of thing, was one time, you know, he was down to his last candy bar, kind of part of a candy bar, and he had to fight the rats. You know this story, don't you, Billy? He had to fight the rats for his candy bar. And that's all. Now, I remember stuff like that because that's exactly what the problem was, living in the kind of places we were living in. R&R to us was not rock and roll, but rats and roaches.
I'm going to remember that one.
You had to look out. Yeah. Whenever you came home, you turned on the light. You don't go in right away, because you'll see a brown wall turn into a white wall.
Right.
It was those kind of things.
I remember those walls.
And so the struggles that he had, a lot of people do not realize. They think that he was so wealthy, well-to-do. I don't know how much he really made in the 3 to 4 years when he was successful. But he was someone who really knew what it was like to be a true creator from the bottom up. I mean, because once you live under those circumstances, your heart pours out to all those who don't have anything. And I think that was one of the great joys of seeing someone else.
And it was a tragedy that at 27 years old, that he left us, like Janis Joplin did, like Morrison did, all at the same age.
Yeah.
And just what was lost to himself, to us, and who knows at this age, whether he'd be now 70, late 60s, whatever he'd be right now, what he'd be playing. But we're going to learn some of his soul is going to come through that night, because Billy Cox is going to be there, who knew him better than anybody, who will be on that stage.
Who's his best friend.
Best friend.
Yeah.
One of America's great bass players, the last member of both Jimi Hendrix Experience and Band of Gypsies. This tour also being put together in part by my old friend Bob Hieronymus.
Oh, well, no, I didn't put it together.
But you're helping to promote it here in this area.
Oh, promote it, yeah.
Right? Promoting it.
That's all.
I don't mean put it together, I mean promoting it.
Yeah.
Billy Cox put it together. You're promoting it.
Yeah.
But both of you who are dedicated to the life and not the legend so much, but remembering who the real Jimi Hendrix was and what he contributed both to our lives as a musician and as a human being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was outstanding.
And I have a new CD out, too.
Yeah, tell them about it.
It's called Old School Blues, and we wanted to go back to the basics. Music kind of lost its way, as far as I'm concerned. And so we got some blues. It's really good listening blues for a change. And I guess I can advertise this. Go to BassistBillyCox.com. That's my webpage. And go to CD Baby and pick it up, Old School Blues.
What you're hearing on this right now is Billy Cox on his CD. Old School Blues, and it's Old School Blue Blues is what's playing under us right now. And I'm so glad you're still doing those licks, man. This is it's good to know that you know, they can't take the music out of you. It's there.
Yeah.
So we will see you all at Strathmore Hall.
I'd like to announce something also. I'd like to send my condolences out to Bob Hendrix. He was the senior vice president of Experience Hendrix. He passed Sunday.
Oh.
And, that was Jimi Hendrix's cousin. Yeah, so that's all that we got. We just saw it on the Experience Hendrix page this morning.
So we'll dedicate this show to him.
Bob Hendrix, yeah.
And
senior vice president of Experience Hendrix.
And we encourage everyone to March the 6th, 8 p.m. at Strathmore Hall down in Bethesda. You can go to www.21stcenturyradio.com. That's 21st, the number's 21, 21stcentury.com, or radio.com. And get tickets and join us there. We've been on the phone here with incredible Billy Cox, who is Jimi Hendrix's best friend, his bass player, both in Jimi Hendrix Experience and Band of Gypsies. Still rolling here with beautiful stuff. and Dr. Bob Hieronymus, who is just a committed community man, historian, thinker, philosopher, muralist.
And a great pitcher. I won 35 games when I was just
and 14. A great pitcher in college. We can't forget that. I'm sorry, Bob.
Well, that's all right.
Billy and Bob, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Very much enjoyed it. Thanks, Mark.
All right.
See you down in Strathmore.
All right, Mark, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Billy, this was great, man. Thank you so much for doing this, man.
All right, thank you for
having me. Look forward to meeting you.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Uncle Billy.
Have a great day.
Take care.
Bye.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.